And now, broadcasting on Star Worldwide Networks, it's In the Green Room. Green is in, but what does that really mean for you? Join the gang for a fun and energetic half-glass, half-full perspective to what and how sustainability is the lifestyle for the future. It can really affect everything you do, from your health, wallet, environment, money, even your morals. So our goal, to help save the planet one show at a time. Now, welcome to the Green Room.
Welcome, everyone, to In the Green Room. I'm Kinga.
And I'm Chet. Today we have a comedy legend in the Green Room.
Stop it. Already I'm going to cut off this intro. You are so full of crap. Your eyes are turning brown. Okay. I am not a legend.
We're going to get so high.
In the words of John Cleese, okay. I'm an icon. No,
okay,
I'm nobody.
Those are synonyms.
What's your name? Rick Bronson.
Rick Bronson. And please meet the lovely Dr. Sedna Bakiria.
Hello. Welcome to In the Green Room.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Should we just call you Doc?
You can call her Doctor. Absolutely. I do. I find it's very exciting to call her Doctor.
Is exciting the real word you were going to use right there?
Well, I'm trying to be politically correct. And
Don't be. This is not a safe space.
I'm recognizing that I'm in my old friend Dave Pratt's studio, and I know Dave Pratt is a professional. And Chet, just because you were trying to coerce me and already rolling a joint 1 minute into the show is evidence that this is not...
Joints are for pussies. We're going to take some dabs right now.
We're doing dabs.
Yeah.
All right. Does Dave Pratt know that dabs take place in his studio? That's what
I would
like
to know. Well, if he doesn't, then he hasn't been watching our show enough. So, you know, if we can get his attention, then fine.
Hang on. Our audio engineer has a comment on that.
Hold on.
We'll wait for the mic to work.
So Rick Bronson, we are so excited because you are... comedian legend, we think you are.
Well, it's very kind of you to say. I've been doing comedy for a long time. I started performing when I was 12 years old. This is now my 40th year of entertainment. I am 52 years old, and I've been doing entertainment of some kind for 40 years. I started as a professional magician, and at 15, I started doing stand-up. So in 3 years, it'll be my 40th anniversary of stand-up, but I've been doing stand-up for 37 years. So I have been doing stand-up longer
Where did you originate?
Oh, I just do stand-up in my family room. No one's actually ever seen me perform. I mean, I'm not a professional, but in my heart and in my head, I am awesome.
He tells the jokes to his different personalities.
That's true. I am very Sybil-esque. I really am. I actually am. No, I've been performing for a long time. I guess the one thing, and Sedna, who's known me for a while, I think the
doctor.
I think the one thing that freaks out most of my friends and the doctor and even my parents to this day is I have never actually worked for anyone. I've never had a real job. When I was 12 years old.
That's amazing. Applause to that.
Right well, there. Thank you. Applause. I appreciate that.
We need a clap.
When I was 12 years old, wow, look, we got sound effects. What the?
Robin's a wizard over there.
Robin, that's the only one we have? Just keep that going the whole time. They'll think I killed. How good was your game? Applause never stopped. It was unbelievable. But yes, the very truth is, the only job that I've ever been employed for was I was a delivery boy. I would delivered newspapers for the Montreal Gazette when I was 12 years old. And other than that, I have never worked for anyone. Apparently, I do not play well in the sandbox with others. Chet, I can't believe how high you are already.
No.
We are a minute into this interview.
Sharp. No, let's get you high. All right.
So you're Canadian then, right?
Look, I'm going to say right now, I have no problems with marijuana because I have Crohn's disease. I have an IBD, inflammatory bowel disease. And if you don't have Crohn's disease, never fun because you have to go see a GI. Have you been to a GI, Chet? No, because you're too fucking young. All right, you little whippersnapper. One day, like me, you'll get to an age where you start selecting your doctor by the thickness of their fingers. Trust me. All right? That will happen. Yes, Robin, you know what I'm talking about. Thank you. Hello from the audio booth. Yeah.
Or the thumb specifically. Oh, trust me. I'm going to bring a measuring tape in there. Like, that thumb radius better be like what?
No, I am no. The way I choose my doctor, I am looking for a hot female anorexic doctor with very thin fingers. That's what I'm looking for.
And is this rated R?
And I want someone to buy me flowers and send me drinks.
I think we're past rated R.
I asked you when we went for drinks, are we allowed to be edgy? And I don't know. I didn't do my research.
I guess this is just
okay. Rick's lying. He texted me. He was excited for that appointment. He was like,
I was pretty excited about him.
Okay, so you started at 15. Is that when you first were like playing shows in clubs or open mics? What did you start with at 15?
Well, I was very fortunate. So because I had already started doing magic at 12, I had performed professionally for 3 years before I had even tried doing stand-up. And most people, when they do stand-up for the first time, the biggest fear is getting over the fear of performing live in front of an audience, public speaking, which is still the number one fear out of all fears today. Some people think it's being naked in front of a group of people, but public speaking is the number one fear. So by the time I was 15 and got my opportunity to get on stage for the very first time doing comedy, I didn't have to struggle with that fear of being on stage, that fear of public speaking, because I had been doing it for so long. So really, all I needed to do was make sure I had some material. The problem is when you're 15 years old, you have zero life experience, and your material is absolutely pathetic. I mean, there's only so many dick jokes you can tell before people go, this guy's got nothing. Nothing.
Just jokes about Morningwood, yeah.
Yeah, that's all I had, exactly. And believe me, at 52, I wish Morningwood jokes were still prevalent as they were back when I was 15 years old. Oh, you'll get there too, Chet. Don't look at me with that smirky face.
It'll come on sooner than you think.
A little Viagra, you know?
Hey, a lot of Viagra.
Pop four of them.
All right, so now for real, does this happen on any of your shows? Do guests come and smoke on your show? Is that something happens?
So yeah, we've had...
All right, so I will partake. I don't want to be one of those guests.
We've had Item 9 Labs on in the house. I'll actually give them the shout out right now because this is Item 9 Labs Ambrosia. So if you're listening and you like smoking a little bit, medicating, or it's actually recreational now, go to... Oh, that's hot, really hot right there.
I was going to say, you have this hot wired, so you don't even need to light this.
Yeah, no, it's right at 700 degrees.
Yeah, that's a sign of an addict, Brett. Chet, just so you know. I just called you Brett. I don't know why I changed your name.
You said you could have smoked me, and now you're like, oh, you're an addict. Here, I got a dab for you. Here, I got you.
At least put a full bowl in there, you cheap son of a bitch. What is wrong
with you? I've got a dab for you.
Kinga, no offense to you. I realize his mother's sitting right beside him, but I called him a cheap son of a bitch. That was probably... Even this guy's not appreciating it. All right.
Is this your first rodeo, Rick? Come on, here you go.
This is not my first rodeo.
Come on, come on. There you go. There you go.
I love how you're just nodding your head no. Like, no, this is not
pretty
happening.
Pretty smooth, eh?
That's really smooth. That's nice.
Yeah, see, so when you have a flame on there and you get it red hot, that gets to around 2,000 degrees. This is about a third of that temperature, so...
And plus you've got the water to cool it off. But the only problem with bongs like this is you can't get crushed ice into it. And when you can get crushed ice in, that cools it off even more, allowing you to take a bigger hit. And if you weren't such a wussy when it came to drugs, you would understand this, Chet.
Okay, interesting. I actually know more about getting high than probably anybody you've ever met. When you put ice in the water, it super cools the smoke and it makes the THC basically less absorbable. So putting ice in your bong is getting you less high.
All right, then you need to start putting it directly into the needle and injecting it into your arm. Because you, sir, have an issue. You've got problems.
No, I'm the most functional
stoner
you've ever
met. Really? This is going live? People can hear this live? This 100%. Is actually happening.
We're smoking weed in the studio. We're not doing anything crazy.
I feel terrible. Dave Pratt and I have a very professional relationship, and here I am doing dab hits off a bong in the studio.
Hey, Rick.
And for you kids at home that are listening, I'm a doctor.
We're not governed by the FCC.
Yeah,
enough said.
We're chilling.
Fair enough.
We're chilling whales in here. Yeah.
So Rick.
FCC is so full of shit anyways. Let's be honest. Really? Honestly. It's a dated organization.
So Rick,
are we not old enough to make our
own
decisions?
I want to hear about how you met your girlfriend.
Well, let's talk comedy.
We're right on the path of his comedy career. Why are you trying to derail the conversation?
I'm curious about something, Rick.
Yes, Robin.
We know you come from a comedy background, but you have one of those voices that I see in animation. Have you ever did a voice for an animation character?
Great question.
I'd like to think that I have the face for TV and not animation, but thank you, Robin, for calling me ugly. I appreciate that.
No.
I would say it's more of a radio face, but no, I'm kidding.
Says the host of a podcast. All right. No, I've not done any voice work. I do appreciate it. I have been told I should do voice work.
I could see you doing an animated character just because you have that little knack to you. It's kind of like Bart Simpson.
It's called ADD, Robin.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's actually HD ADD. I have high definition attention deficit disorder.
I feel for the girlfriend.
You should. It's actually 4K ADHD. Oh. It is actually very confusing.
You might need to smoke a little bit more then.
No, that was... Oh, what the hell?
Robin said so. I got to dab it for you, though. Wait.
Robin told me to, everybody. This isn't my fault.
Isn't that the best way to calm down ADHD?
This seems extreme to you. This is actually the healthiest way to smoke.
That is.
I want to be smoking until I'm 90.
Chet, let me ask you a question.
That's why I do it this way.
Have you ever gotten so stoned that you pulled up to a stop sign and waited for it to change colors?
Waiting for it to turn green, yes.
That's a good sign.
I was in an Uber and that happened. Wink, wink. No, I'm kidding. I was driving, but
bad chat. All right, we'll do one more. We'll do one more, and then we'll get serious. King, I promise. I will answer questions. I will fill dead air.
Because
so far there's been a lot of dead air. What type of show is this that there's dead air after dead air after dead air?
We're lubing you up. We're lubing you up with some dabs. We're getting you ready to tell all the dirty stories. Come on.
So, Doc, so can you tell us a little bit about your boyfriend since he's puffing so much that he can't talk?
So he's a genius, and he's very sharp, as you can tell, how quickly he talks on his feet and how he can really kind of...
How did you meet?
Turkish theme bath.
Okay, so Rick, when was your...
I thought she was a little boy, I'll be honest. Okay. Robin liked that one. Come on, put the mic on if you're going to laugh,
Robin. There's never a dull moment.
I need laughter, damn it. That's what comics live for. I'm not doing this for my health.
I'm just safe over here because I'm not going to get heckled as much as poor Chet over there, right?
Chet's only getting heckled because he's the exact same age as my eldest son. They're both 25 years of age. Although my son probably would wear the exact same shirt as Chet. The type of shirts that you walk into, you know, you'll go to Kmart, you look at a shirt on a rack, and you go, who the hell buys this shit? And then I look at Chet, and I go, now I know. All right.
I still make it look good, though. So
you do.
Okay.
You're a handsome young man, Chet. If I weren't with a lovely young lady, I'd be all over you. I promise you.
Are you telling us a secret there, Rick?
So when was your first headline show? How long did it take you to get
So sadly, I mean, this is embarrassing, but I'm a bit of an idiot savant when it came to comedy. I headlined at 15 years of age. When I was 15 years old, I had 45 minutes of material.
And I look back
now, and it wasn't like the greatest of material, but I always
still
had
really impressive.
I had a boatload of charisma, and I had a boatload of confidence on stage, and I was able to sell a lot of BS as A. I took a lot of B material and made it A material just by how I delivered it. And the old line was, how does he do it, folks? Volume, volume, volume. Just like a good salesperson. Just like the doctor here who can sell ice to an Eskimo, I promise you.
Yeah, you're making me work over here on the volume knob.
I'll tell you, Robin, you want to hear a great story about volume? So I used to host a TV show for the Travel Channel.
Finally, we get something about your background.
This is all we've been talking about. So I hosted a series called The Tourist for the Travel Channel, which is a show that I can proudly say I created and developed and produced and directed and was fortunate enough to have air in 42 countries around the world.
Wow, damn.
And I worked with a sound engineer, Robin. This is for you. It makes me laugh when I think of this story because if you've worked in television before or any type of production, you'll often use just a lapel mic, and they put the lapel mic, and it's a lav mic, exactly as Robin says, and it's attached to a battery pack that usually goes inside your jacket or at the back of your butt, and you kind of hide it and so that people on TV don't see the microphone. Essentially, it's a way of booming a mic boom. I'll have to explain all these terms, I guess, but essentially on a TV show, they'd hold a boom mic over a group of people, but this is a way to hide a mic on oneself. And on the actual packs, on the mic packs themselves, they range in volume from 0 to 10. And typically, you'll be anywhere from 4, 5, 6 is usually the mid-range. And if someone's a really quiet talker, you'll bring it up to 7 or 8. And I had a great sound man, a guy by the name of Jamie Smith, who was our sound man for the show, long-haired, ponytailed dude, musician wannabe, who ended up being a sound engineer in
probably
the TV
a stoner,
world. He looks like it, but he isn't, but his kid was, for sure. But he had one of my favorite lines of all time when he talked to me, when he just took my battery pack out and adjusted it and tweaked it. And he said, "Rick, I never realized zero was actually a level until I worked with you." Apparently, zero is still loud. Yeah.
It's kind of like.
You got pipes, yeah.
Yeah, you do.
And I do have pipes. You know, yes, I do.
That's why I said you would make a great animated character, because it kind of is like on the stylings of almost Gilbert Gottfried, where he has that annoying kind of little kitty type voice. But
Gilbert, what are you talking about?
Exactly. Yeah. You well, have that, that, that style with your
now
voice.
Now I feel like that was just an anti-Semitic Jewish comment, Robin. I'm sorry. And speaking on behalf of all my people in Israel around the world, yes, I am Jewish. I don't look it, but I can prove it. Trust
know.
Me. And you know why Jewish women, why Jewish guys have to get circumcised? This is a very old story. Nobody, it's a true story. Why Jews get circumcised? It's because Jewish women won't touch anything unless they get at least 20% off. So that's really. Too soon? And I'll take more Jewish history. You know, Hebrew, we read from right to left. And you know why Jews read from right to left? See, Chet, you should know this. It's the first Jew that ever picked up a menu. First, we looked at the price. Then we saw what we were going to eat. That's how that works. Thank you, Robin. I'm so happy you're here. I love Robin.
I love Robin, too.
So can we get back to, like, who are the comedians that are your favorite comedians? And
I didn't know we were on that. Yeah, we didn't get back to that. When did we get on that?
Wait, we had to start being there before we can get back to it.
I want to get back to
your history. I'm sorry. Can I ask a question? Have we started the interview?
1,000%.
We have. All right. Okay.
So can we get back to
it? Wait, I have a second question. How am I doing?
Fantastic.
Okay, crushing it.
This has been fun as fuck so far. So.
Just wanted to make sure. Thank you, Robin. Thank you.
Well, I think everybody in the room is getting high just from the vapes in the air. But
I blame Chet.
I blame Rick. So.
Well, I blame you because you said you told Chet that you could outsmoke him.
I can outsmoke your piss-ass son. Yes, I can. There's no question.
He's got no chance. He weighs 90 pounds. No chance.
That is the greatest compliment. Chet, can you say that again? That might be the greatest compliment I've ever received on a podcast. It looks like I weigh 90 pounds.
Yeah. Too much THC will be coursing through those tiny veins.
No, because I'm the type of guy that I smoke a little THC, and I'm like, is that Mastro's across the street? I can see it from here.
You mean I could bench press you, Rick? Seriously? You
could, I think you could. Well, wow. I'm 168 pounds. Holy shit, Robin. Those are pipes. I have arms like that, but they're attached to my ass.
How are we even going to have a conversation after that one? Right?
I don't know. But Sedna's the same way. Sedna works out 6 days a week. And I'll remember the first time I was kind of being friendly with her, and I had my hand on her legs, and we were sitting having dinner, and I had my hand between her legs, and all of a sudden she started squeezing, and like to a point where like my fingers were crushing, to a point where I thought, I can never safely give this woman oral sex, because I could die.
You're definitely not going to be able to finger her later, yeah. A broken finger.
Well, I'm sorry. Kinga, you were asking a question.
Well, everybody out there wants to hear about Rick Bronson, and I know that you won Comedian of the Year in Canada.
I did. So
how
I
many
was
times?
More than once.
So
eight times.
I was the 8-time COCA Comedian of the Year. I have been awarded, which is very flattering without question, and I've won awards for my magic as well. Sadly, at one point, I was king of the magic geeks. I was on the cover of Genie Magazine, which is the International Magicians Magazine. I know, Robin, getting you hot, isn't it? Come on, you can tell me.
I didn't know it existed.
I can see it. I can see it. Oh, he's a magician.
Magicians crush a lot. A lot of person.
Well, see, if I ever dated a musician, a magician, I'd be...
See, you see, even subconsciously, you were hoping I was a musician.
Rick,
If I ever dated a magician, it would be like, you know what? You can make things disappear. Can you disappear as well?
I can. See? Right after an orgasm, right? I can fuck off.
Poof. Smoke bomb.
Vanished. Are kids listening to this? I need to know.
Absolutely not. No okay, kids. Good. No kids right, can right. be listening to this. So Rick, tell us about your show. What was that like filming that, and how many years?
Oh, so yeah, great question, King. One of the most amazing experiences of my life. Essentially, I was very fortunate. I was a stand-up comic that thought to myself, you know what? I've done the comedy thing for a while, and I said this at 21, which is ironic because most people are not even in comedy at 21, but at that point I've been doing it for 6 years. And I thought, I want to mix it up a little bit, and I thought, maybe I should do TV. And I was just, you know, arrogant, cocky, and young, and 21, and feeling like I can do anything. And at 21 years old, I said, let's go film a pilot for a TV show. And what did I know back then? I knew travel because I traveled the world as a stand-up comedian, and I loved traveling. I loved visiting other cities and absorbing and taking in other cultures. And to me, it was the most fascinating thing in the world. So I created a travel show, and we shot a pilot. And then we took that pilot and we brought it to the Banff Television Festival, which is a huge international television festival. And any of my friends in the TV world will know exactly what we're talking about. And we shopped it there and we sold it. However, we only sold it to a Canadian network in year one. And the Canadian network picked it up, and we kind of made the first season on a very bare bones Canadian budget, because a Canadian budget, I describe it this way, a Canadian TV series, the entire annual budget for 13 episodes, which is traditionally what you would do in a season, 12 or 13 episodes, was that of like one episode on a U.S. TV show for the craft service table, for what the food is on the craft service table. So we made 13 episodes of a show on a shoestring budget, and we had so much success with it that the Discovery Network, the Travel Channel in the U.S., picked it up in the second season. And when that happened, the Travel Channel UK came on board. And then, like I said, it was just a snowball effect. And 40 or so different countries came on board.
How long did it last?
We did 4 seasons of the show. We ended up doing 40 episodes. I think the only thing that killed it was the Travel Channel in the U.S., Discovery Network out of Bethesda, Washington, was our biggest backers. They were our money guys. And a new general manager came in. And they just kind of recognized that, hey, you know, every GM comes in and they want to put their own spin on the channel, change the direction. So they went from a lot of host-driven shows, because I was on TV at that time, kind of the big Travel Channel shows in the early 2000s. I was hosting a show. The guy that ended up hosting the very famous Amazing Race show was hosting a show on the Travel Channel. Geraldo Rivera was a host on the Travel Channel. And a guy from the UK by the name of Ian Wright, who did a show called The Lonely Planet, which is still one of the most amazing travel shows and really holds up, and I highly recommend it.
Was your show funny?
Well, that was it. We were the very first show, even before, why am I blanking? Insomnia, who did the show? Dave Attell. Yeah. Even before Dave Attell did Insomnia, which was a New York-based kind of nighttime travel show, we were the very first hybrid travel comedy show. And the whole basis behind the travel show was I never wanted it to be strictly about what bored me about regular travel shows. It was like, here's a beautiful vista and here's a camera that's panning across the vista. And then it's a boring voiceover describing the population of Ecuador. Is, you know, and
it's perfect to fall asleep to.
It's what it is. And I didn't want that. The one thing I recognize from being a comedian and traveling is the best way to really appreciate any city or locale you are in is by seeing it through the eyes of the people that live in that place. So we made our show about the people more so than about the place, and we made a very intention, a huge purpose to just make sure that we saw the city and we saw the town through the eyes of a local.
So how do we see that show now?
Oh, man, you call the Travel Channel, you bitch like a son of a bitch and say, bring back that Rick Bronson, the best thing that's ever happened to travel TV. I don't think I can do it again, but I could probably find you some copies. Unfortunately, being a TV show that started in 99 and went through the early 2000s, we kind of predated that period where everything got uploaded to the internet. It wasn't, you know, nowadays a show's on TV tonight, hours within its actual appearance, it's on the internet. that wasn't the generation that I lived in. And fortunately, I'll say the same thing about my comedy. I'm kind of glad that when I was really coming up in comedy, and, you know, and I was probably at my biggest in the late 90s, early 2000s again, the best thing about comedy is that there wasn't the internet. I could go and take a joke or take a routine and work it for 2 and 3 and 4 years and try to really make it a great bit. But the problem with the advent of the internet now and everything being so immediate, a comic does a bit and immediately gets onto the internet, and now that bit can never be done or reproduced again. The guy can't even do it live again, because we talked about this having
and
a
then
drink
there's a
before.
Lot of comics that steal those bits. Like, it happens all the time.
100% as well.
Sad to see.
You don't want to put so much out there. And again, this is why I was so happy that my material was not out there to be stolen, and it gave me the opportunity to do something that a lot of comics don't have the ability to do today, and that's to be able to craft a joke. That's to be able to start with a premise and then take that premise and mold it and shape it and change it and fix it and jigsaw puzzle it over 2 and 3 and 4 years and over 300 and 600 and 900 sets. Because nowadays it gets seen so quickly, the bit almost has to get thrown out. There's a reason why every comic's first special, first album, first CD, first DVD is their best. It's because they've had 10, 12 years to get to that point. And then they get famous. Then they have to put out that second album, and that only gives them 18 months to 24 months to do it. So what's going to be better, an album or a record or live taping that's had 12 years of chance and opportunity to build up to this point, or just 2 years to turn over something new because now your fans are demanding it?
Of course, the one that has 10 years of time on it. And I feel like that Absolutely. Problem is why a lot of comics that are coming on tour are having you put your phone into one of those like sealable bags or whatever, and you don't get your phone back till after the show. Like Chappelle did that. Rogan did that.
Chappelle started doing that. As a matter of fact, I went to go hang out with Chappelle in Minnesota 3 or 4 years ago. Everything now is BC to me, not before Christ, before COVID. That's what I call everything. And AD will be, of course, after the demic is what that is. That's not bad. Write that down. That's pretty good.
That's not bad.
It's a good bit.
That's all right. There's something to build on there. Everyone's smiling in the room, so that's a good sign. What the hell was I talking about? Shit.
Chappelle.
So I went to go see, one of my very dear friends, I'm very, very fortunate, one of my closest buddies is a gentleman by the name of Donnell Rawlings, who played the famous character of Ashy Larry on the Chappelle Show, who will forever be known in history because his most famous, like, he has one of the most famous expressions of all time, which is, "I'm rich, bitch."
Rick James.
I mean, it's just, he's one of the best.
So you've worked with so many comedians. Who are your favorites?
Well, I mean, so...
Well, let him finish the Chappelle story. Okay, right in the middle of the story. Okay. Her ADD. It's like...
No, I think I'm... I think this
squirrel!
Is like, I think the smoke is like coming my way.
It is. It definitely is.
It's affecting
And there's still some going in there, so I'm going to take a hit.
So while he's taking a break, I'll tell you guys, I study the process of his genius.
Okay, so can I just tell you, and I want Sedna to do this. So Sedna actually has a...
Dr.
It's
Sedna.
Called gelologist.
Gelatology.
See, I'm a fucking idiot. She's a genius.
Gelatology?
Okay, so please tell them what gelatology is, and then please give me a psychological analyst breakdown. Do what you do.
Okay, I'm not sure what I do, but gelatology is essentially the study of humor and the way in which it impacts people in terms of their physiology and their psychology. So when he's talking about 10 years, right, to get that first set for people who are crushing it, the people who you're watching and loving, I study the process that gets them there in terms of how many times did they essentially fail and how many times did they get up and have that resilience to get back on stage and really have the courage to stand in front of a group of strangers and try and kill it. And that's why Rick's a genius.
There's a degree for that? Seriously?
No, go on.
That's it.
Wow.
I mean,
there's some anomalies like Rick crush right from the beginning, though.
But Dr.
Or Chappelle,
I'd like to hear.
Chappelle talks about he was crushing from the time he was 15 or 16.
So there's a few idiot savants. I started at 15. Chappelle started at 15. Chris Rock started at 15. I feel very... I mean, look, I didn't have their success as a stand-up, but that was also a lot to do with health reasons. I have Crohn's disease. I was hospitalized. I almost died. Couldn't stay on the road. But that's a whole... whole other fucking. That's another.
It sounds
hour.
Like a country that's, song. It,
well, yeah. If I lose my dog in my pickup, yeah, then it's a country song.
And screws his cousin, but no.
So doctor.
Speaking of which,
doctor. Go ahead. So what is your background? How did you get to be studying his comedy routines?
Sure. So I was actually writing what I would call a real dissertation topic, which was about essentially gender gaps in higher education for Indian women and their motivations in terms of obtaining higher education instead of getting married, because arranged marriages are very prevalent in my culture.
You need to stay with her. It's just frightening how smart she is, okay? So just
okay,
stay
keep
focused.
Going.
He says that, but I want to just cut and say comedians have higher emotional intelligence. They have higher intelligence in general compared to the general population. And you
I'm sorry,
see that.
Can you dumb that down and explain that to me? What were you saying?
Comedians are smarter than the general population, and studies show that over and over and over in terms of creativity, everything. It's
so,
amazing.
So what did you study in school? Like, what was your major in?
So I originally majored in Shakespearean studies, and then I moved into international education, and then I essentially started studying comedians and the ways in which they can impact the world.
She has 4 degrees, including a doctorate.
Okay, so what can we call, what title can we give you? Doctor.
She's a doctor. What, did you not listen to me, Kinga? As I said, she got a
but
goddamn
doctor. Doctor of.
So I have my doctorate in education.
Okay. Doctor of education.
Good question.
Okay,
she's
doctor of education.
She's going to school you. Get ready.
great question. But the point is, what they do can really be incorporated into what I would call like normal professionalism, because they have the courage. Like, he talked about how people are more afraid of speaking publicly than anything else. That means people are more afraid of speaking in front of a group of people than death.
Okay, but do you think that's a self-confidence issue? Because like he was saying, he built up his confidence using magic on stage, and so that's why he was so natural up there. Like, I think it's more of a reflection on self-confidence.
Oh yeah.
Well, it's all, which is also connected to intelligence, of course, but
and validation.
Yeah.
Which you get from laughter. So when you do something, you take a chance and you're vulnerable and you get up on stage and people laugh, just like all of you have been doing here.
Yes.
It improves confidence for everyone. It makes everyone feel more comfortable. It improves his confidence, and yes, then he's going to have more of a kind of daring ability to push those lines and try again. So
I love
he's more
it.
Resilient.
Well, and also, doctor.
I think that means I might get laid.
There's a chance.
Well, you've already sexually objectified me very early in the podcast before I even started talking. So thank you for that when you're talking about your hands between my legs.
Rick, I want to ask you a question.
We've never had somebody get fingered on the air before. No. In the studio. So this is the first.
Shit,
I'm not watching.
That
happening.
Was not where we went, and too far. Too far, Chet.
Rick, I have a
question. Can you do me a favor? Can you cut Chet's mic, please? Just cut Chet's mic.
I have a question for you, Rick.
Yes,
since we're talking about how successful you have been, can you go back to the first time that you had one of the worst experiences as a comedian performing
great
on stage?
Question. Yeah.
Because we don't usually.
That's a great question.
We
I was
going to
ask, when did you bomb?
That.
When did you bomb?
I haven't. I've been very fortunate because I did start in magic, and I was already a pretty, I became pretty adept at entertaining and comfortable, and I'd seen many scenarios and situations, so there wasn't much that had affected me. So I never really. I was very lucky that I never had that bomb. It's funny, I just told Sedna this story not long ago. I remember my most uncomfortable experience on stage ever. I was performing during the Just for Last Festival in Montreal. They had a club out in the West Island of Montreal, and it was essentially a restaurant that they converted into a comedy venue for the purpose of the comedy festival. And they had a stage, which was, for lack of a better term, stage is generous. It was plywood sitting on top of 4 milk cartons.
Oh.
And it was probably a 10x10 stage on 4 milk cartons, maybe one in the middle, maybe 5 for support. In any event, I'm very manic on stage, and I'm energetic, and I move around a lot. And I took the mic out of the stand, as I always do, because I'm not a fan of comics who keep the mic in the stand. It just feels too static for me. I feel that if you're a live performer, you should give your audience a live experience. But that's another conversation. I put the mic stand down in the front left side of the stage, and I walk over to the front right side of the stage with the microphone. And I'm heavier back then. I was a chubby little Jewish boy. And I just remember kind of the plywood kind of tilting in the direction I was standing, which caused the mic stand that was on the front left of the stage to begin tipping over. And it tipped over all the way over. And if you've ever held a commercial-grade mic stand, folks, it's not like anything you'd order on Amazon for your home podcasting kit. They are heavy sons of bitches. They are... It's like a rifle. It's a lot of metal. And this lot of metal hit a 79-year-old woman smack dab in the middle of the forehead, ooh, causing her to crack her skull open. And let me tell you, folks, I don't care how funny you think you are. There is no coming back from beating up grandma. There's nothing you can do. There is nothing you can say. Everyone is fixated on grandma.
I mean, statistically speaking, she was probably racist, but...
Well, Chet, again, I don't know how you made the jump, but apparently your weed's affecting you a lot more than it's affecting me, because I'm still speaking coherently, actually moderately entertainingly.
But the thing is you can now use that story in your comedy routine, because you can laugh at it. See?
That's right, Robin. You'll come, you'll sit in the front row, and you and I will go, do you remember the day we cut Chet's mic? What a fucking idiot he was, huh?
Gee, thanks.
I was talking about the grandma thing, Rich.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not to bang on Chet.
Maybe the weed is working.
I was just trying to stick up for you a little bit and say, hey, she might have been... Not every grandma's as sweet as you think they might
no,
be.
No, she was. True. She seemed like a very lovely young lady, or
actually,
old lady,
I thought
rather.
That was a very funny comment. Did you hear me laughing hysterically?
That's why I said you can use it in your routine now, because it's over with, but it's still funny.
I don't know. I have a hard time with that. You know, a lot of my comedy on stage is I'm very interactive. I like to talk to the audience. I've often been introduced as the Canadian Don Rickles, because I'm kind of like a bit of an insult comic. You know, I love the acts like Elisa Lampanelli and that stuff. Kind of comedy. And it's not that I'm lazy. It's not that I can't write a joke. I've written lots of material over the years. I've done multiple I've had 4 one-hour specials on television, and I've done multiple shows over the years.
Four one-hour specials? What'd you talk about?
Comedy.
All comedy specials. All stand-up specials. Yeah. Yeah. No. Well, one porn, if you had to know. Yeah, fine. The Jewish porn is called Debbie Does Nothing. Are you happy?
So did you ever?
Jesus Christ.
So did you ever?
Also one of my people, and thank you for taking him from us.
So did you ever have a moment where it was like you versus the crowd bombing, or nothing like that? Like, you know, a Bill Burr in Philadelphia moment?
You asked kind of a great question there. You ask, like, sometimes is there doubt on stage when a comic bombs? But you bring up something that I've always found fascinating. Often, you know, a comic will get very down on themselves for having a rough set. But I will often tell you, it's not the comedian, and sometimes it is indeed the audience, or it's the atmosphere, time in the world.
So people with no sense of humor.
Not necessarily that. I mean, sometimes it just could be that full moon kind of weirdness, or just the fact that we're living in such a divided world right now, or the craziness of COVID. But, you know, comedians will do routines. They're called stand-up routines for a reason. We do them so frequently that we get better with each and every practice of doing it. So that's why it becomes routine. It becomes routine to do. Just like going to bed and brushing your teeth as part of your routine. So is doing stand-up when you do it over and over again. And sometimes you have to ask yourself, when you do a joke over and over again and you know you've told it well, and the night before that joke got you an applause break, and tonight, for whatever reason, it just got you crickets. It got you nothing, just nothing at all. You ask yourself, I mean, is it the joke? And I have a hard time believing it's the joke, because the joke has been tried and tested. It's been done several times in other venues. But sometimes there's just that full moon weird night. And I tell all my friends, and I guarantee you this, you could lock me in a basement for 3 years and torture me and keep it dark so that I lose complete sense of time and space. Put me on a stage in a comedy club, and I can tell you whether or not it's a full moon by how the audience is behaving.
But you know how sometimes, like, if you're, people kind of copycat people. Like, I've noticed, like, if you get a couple people that start laughing, then everybody else will start laughing too. Mm-hmm. Or, like, if you go to, like, a, a club and like the one person that has to get up, I'm the one that starts to dance, and like people come and copy and then the dance floor gets packed. Don't you feel like it's kind of like that?
Well, there's no question. I mean, the beautiful thing about laughter in general, and this
it's
is
contagious.
Probably a better question for the doctor, but it's absolutely contagious. Not only is it contagious, but can I share with you what the benefits of laughter is and why people should be going to the comedy clubs? And not just mine, House of Comedy at 5350 East High Street, www.houseofcomedy.net, but nice I mean, plan. Any comedy club.
But probably that one.
But definitely that one, with no question.
I mean, don't you have several?
I mean, if you want to meet Rick Bronson, that's really the only place you're going to meet him.
And the other comedy clubs in town, their
I don't
food
think
is-
they are any. I think they all closed during COVID, and I'm the only open
well,
one now.
Well, they served dog food before COVID, I mean.
So don't you have other comedy clubs throughout the
nation?
I do.
I have, yeah, I have comedy
Where
clubs in Minnesota, at the Mall of America in Minnesota, the world's largest shopping center. And we have comedy club in Vancouver, British Columbia, Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, inside West Edmonton Mall, the second largest shopping center and entertainment complex in the world. And I'm currently in the process of building out a new club. I was just looking at some demo pictures on my phone that were
in
coming
Dallas.
In Plano, Texas. Just Plano, just north
Plano.
Of Dallas.
What's
you
the name
got
of,
it.
The, of your club that's at Mall of America?
House of Comedy. All of my clubs are called okay. the House of Comedy, except for my flagship club. The first club that I opened in West Edmonton Mall in Canada is called Rick Bronson's The Comic Strip.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Isn't that... The House of Comedy at the Mall of America, doesn't that one have a really famous open mic?
I don't know if it's famous, but I'm glad to hear that. I mean, if it's made its way all the way to your place here in Phoenix, I mean, I guess.
I heard it's like one of the ones to go to.
But I'll say one thing about our clubs in general, and this is something I'm quite proud of, is I think the fact that I'm a comic first, I don't consider myself a club owner. I'm a stand-up mm-hmm. comic. And what's really key to me and important to me and lovely to me is that the comedians that work for me in all of our markets and the local comics see and treat me as a comedian first. And I'm part of that comedy brethren. And because I'm a comic first, I'm so pro developing comedy and developing the comedy scene and giving guys opportunity and seeing people with potential that many people might not see at this instance, but because of the longevity I've had in this industry and the long time I've been at my career, I can see and spot it. It really is the most amazing thing for us is that we are this development club and that we really help develop talent. And the most important thing to me, and I've had this conversation with Sedna, I'm not money driven. I'm happy to make a good living. I'd like to be remembered for being.
You're passionate about comedy.
Not just passionate about comedy, but a guy that really helped advanced the careers and advanced the business and push it forward, because I truly in my heart of hearts believe it is the purest of all arts, not to take away from music or dance or theater or acting, but there is no art where you are more naked and more alone. When you're in a band, you have five other people to blame if the show goes shit. When you are a stand-up, it is all you and it's on you. And I think it is the purest and most beautiful of all the arts. And I have nothing but the utmost respect for anyone that tries it, amateur or professional alike. And anyone that does it will have my continued support. That along with the fact that I am a huge advocate for the First Amendment. And even if you want to come up and say Jews suck, I don't care. I want to believe that stand-up comedy clubs are the last bastion of free speech. And I will do everything till the day I die to protect that.
So I have a question. If you have a comedian that thinks he's funny and you hire him and you bring him in, but he's not funny, what do you do? Like, do you like... pull him down when he's like...
I send him to your fucking podcast, King.
Wait, no, we want funny people here. Come on.
So, no, seriously, what do you do? Somebody's up there and they're not funny. What do you do?
If someone's not funny, I mean... Well, I'll tell you from a personal scenario. So, I remember the first time I headlined in America. When I was 15, I headlined in Canada. The first time I headlined in America wasn't until I was 17. I was in Seattle, Washington, and I was brought in to be the feature act, which is the second guy. There's the MC, the feature, then the headliner. And I was the feature act on the Thursday night, and I performed. And the headliner, who was a lovely gentleman, just a lovely, lovely man, was such a nice guy, but I was at a stage in my comedy career where my sets were really strong and they were really fluid and really tight, and I was doing a lot of shows, and I'm a high energy act that had the ability to connect with an audience, and I can say I could
kind of blew him out of the water.
I could crush. I had the ability to crush. And after the Thursday night show, the owner of the club brought me into his office and asked me to close out the rest of the weekend and made the headliner become the feature. Ooh. And I felt, it was really, it was mixed emotions at the highest level because first and foremost, I felt the awkwardness of the situation, especially for this gentleman, and because I had to spend the rest of the weekend working with him. But, you know, conversely, it was pretty exciting that, I mean, I just blew this guy out of the water, and now they want me to be the headliner
really
here for the rest
of
the week. And,
how would he have followed you, though, if you were crushing that hard? Like, following that would have been a tough act.
He didn't, and that's what the owner recognized right away, is that, look, this guy's not going to be able to follow this guy for the rest of the week, and if I want my shows to build, because a good show is like a movie, like a TV show, like anything. It should fucking build. It should start, you know. Right. Yeah. It should be an arc. There's a reason why it's called a story arc. It goes up, right? It needs to look like a graph. It needs to look like a stock market. It needs to look like Sedna's investment in Bitcoin. That's what it needs to look like.
One other thing I wanted to touch on, going back to that comedy.
I hope it's not my penis, Brett, but go on. Continue.
No, not into you, but...
Sorry, Robin. Robin's laughing, really. Robin, honestly, I want to know, because you record all these podcasts. Is this a good one? Like,
I'm laughing my ass off on me, Rick. Yeah.
All right, Robin.
Yeah.
But yeah, comedy being the highest art form, there's no other... as a fan, there's no other show that you can go to that can elevate your mood in that kind of a way. When you see a comedian crush, it can totally change your mood.
It's an amazing
unlike
feeling.
Anything else. Like, it doesn't compare to going to a fucking art museum or a concert, because you just leave ecstatic.
Well, that's not fair, Brett, because that's a Chet.
It's Chet.
I can't say Brett.
How high are you? I think I can outsmoke you.
We did good. Yeah, all right.
Hold on. What is
know what my name
Rick,
is. Come on.
What does Rick rhyme with?
Oh.
Prick? I'm just kidding.
Damn, she's got you two ways there, Rick.
I have a blonde white Scottsdale chick with a black lady's name giving me grief. How do you end up with Kinga as a blonde white Scottsdaler? I'm Kinga. Wakanda forever.
That's hilarious.
So, I have a question. Hilarious. I have a question for you, Rick.
Kinga, you want to swing it?
Oh, jeez. Hey, Rick.
I'm here with my date, Kinga.
How long were you waiting to say that?
Damn. Rick,
Robin.
I'm curious to know.
Yes, my dear.
And I know this is going to be really hard to come up with just one, but who is your ultimate favorite comedian? And we're not talking about yourself, but somebody.
Yes.
Who is your most ultimate favorite comedian of all time, living or dead?
Great. I'm glad you gave the addendum on the question, because I can answer it now easily. Sam Kinison.
You know, because I was going to say, you have the stylings of him. You do.
Loud, obnoxious, and in your face.
Exactly.
I know. And I appreciate all that about Sam. I'll tell you a great Sam story, if it's okay if I talk about my drug days. Is that all right?
You're all getting stoned on the show. Come on now.
I once tried cocaine.
Hey, this is a vegetable, okay?
Fair enough. But
weed is a vegetable.
I'm talking about hard drugs here now. And I once tried cocaine.
The fun ones. Come on.
And I don't think it really works, because I stayed awake for 3 days waiting for it to kick in. But thank you. Now there's a chick that's done some blow. Hello, Robin.
Just once.
I'm kidding. I don't like it. I just like the way it smells. We were at the last festival in the mid-90s in Montreal, and I was fortunate enough to be on a show with Sam Kinison, and he was already a superstar at this point. And certainly in the eyes of every comedian out there, this was the god. I mean, he was just one of the guys.
Legend, yeah.
Yeah, and still to this day. And I fortunately ended up for a few evenings, and on one particular evening, having a late-night party with Sam Kinison. And ironically, this is the story that had me leave and move out of Montreal, Canada. And I'll tell you why as I tell the story. But It was about 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and Sam Kinison turns to me and asks me, he says, Rick, do you know where we can get any more blow? Because he knew I was the local kid. I lived there, so I know people. I'm like, oh, you know, I'll see what I can do, right? So I make a call, and yeah, I guess I've got a little more pull than I thought, and within, you know, 25 minutes, we had more coke, and we partied, and it was just... I had just a great night. I mean, partying and hanging out with Sam Kinison and spending time with him was just one of the greatest experiences of my life. It was only a couple of weeks later that I recognized that really no one should be able to track down cocaine on a Tuesday at 4:30 in the morning. I mean, this isn't a weekend, people.
Science, you've got a problem.
Exactly. This is not a Friday or Saturday night. This is a Tuesday, all right? We're not even at hump day here, and I am tracking down blow for a gentleman at 4:30 in the morning. I realize I need to get out of Montreal.
Right now, you're probably inspiring a lot of people to become comics.
No,
that sounds like
not.
A good Tuesday night.
And I will say, folks, if I can say anything, I've done comedy both high and straight, and there's no better joy than doing it straight. And there's no better joy than actually, and we were just talking about this a few weeks ago, too. And when you are on stage and you have an audience as a performer, no matter what type of art you have, and you have the audience.
I don't know, with that jacket, you come off a little gay, but I mean.
You don't like the jacket?
No, it's
like
the jacket. I'm fucking with you. I'm fucking with you.
But when you have the audience, Brett/Chet, in the palm of your hands.
Got him so high,
I said
can't
Brett/Chet.
No, I was talking to him. I was talking to Brett.
But when you have the audience in the palm of your hands and they're following you on every joke and every bit and every punchline and every tag and every callback, and you literally see people, you've heard the expression knee slapping, but you see people convulsing so hard with laughter that they are indeed slapping their knees and huddling and hurling at their guts. And it is, without question, the greatest high. As good as this stuff is, Brett/Chet, it is really good. But as good as that stuff is, there is nothing more magical than being able to take a room full of strangers that you don't know from Adam and take them on one of the most wildest rides of their lives.
That's awesome.
So I think, my funniest experience was with Dave Chappelle and you and Rachel. I thought Dave Chappelle was the funniest.
He's one of the greatest of all time, 100%.
He's my favorite.
Wait, I want to hear more
Never heard of him.
I want to hear about more of your amazing stories about, like, that story with Kinison, other stories partying with some of these comics that are just, you know.
I've been very fortunate. I set off, Charlie Murphy and I set off the smoke detectors at my club in Edmonton so that the fire department came and they showed up and saw that it was Charlie Murphy and they were like, yeah, keep it going. Have fun. We actually hot knifed in my kitchen, an industrial commercial kitchen. We were doing hash knives in the kitchen.
That's ratchet.
In a commercial restaurant. Yeah,
that, I mean, I've done it before, but
hot knives are the best. I mean, you could burn your lip for life. You could have two. You could tattoo yourself with two knife marks right there on your lip, or give yourself a Hitler stash if you're not too careful. But and be very careful if you're Jewish. You definitely don't want a Hitler stash. That sends a mixed message.
Okay, you need to evolve your knife hits. You use a funnel.
Wait, what does this mean?
You lost me.
What's hot knives? Yes, what is this?
So hot knives is you would take two knives, like butter knives, just regular like cutlery butter knives, and you put them into like whether it's a gas range you have or an electric range, and you put the knives under there, and you heat them up till they get red hot. Then you'll take a little piece of hash, like a black piece of hash, and then you take the hash and you pick it up on one knife because it sticks from the heat. Then you squeeze the other knife to it. I can't believe I'm doing a drug class for kids at home right now. And then you squeeze the knives together, and then it creates this smoke comes up from the two knives because the heat of the two knives
pressing together. If you're doing this at home,
use a funnel, and then you won't burn yourself.
No, but that was the way we did it when we were kids. That's how we did it.
Robin gave us the one minute mark. It sounds like Rick has a problem.
I do have a problem.
I don't have enough drugs. So if you have them, please bring them to the House of Comedy on High Street. at houseofcomedy.net. Again, that's the houseofcomedy.net.
Rick Bronson.
So we have 1 minute left. What about Jerry Seinfeld? Because he's one of my favorites, and Chet has met Jerry Seinfeld.
I have nothing but the utmost respect for Jerry. On a personal note, he's never been my style of comedy. I'm not
a little
really,
too clean, but he's still
I'm not.
Funny.
Oh, he's so brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant. And I will say this much too.
I think he's so funny.
I think the masturbation episode of the Seinfeld series that was beautifully called "The Contest," that was written by Jerry and Larry David, might be one of the most amazingly written 30-minute sitcoms. Our 23-minute sitcom scripts in the history of sitcom television. Absolute brilliance.
So
brilliance.
Funny. So funny. So Chet, you got to meet him and...
I mean, when I was a little baby.
Really?
You weren't a baby.
I was like a toddler.
Point to the dolly where the bad man touched him. Point to the dolly.
I would be really rich if that actually happened.
Robin liked that one, too. Robin's got a sick sense of humor. I like
Damn
Robin.
Right.
Anyway, Rick Bronson, thank you so much for
being
here.
My pleasure, Kinga.
You are so funny.
We need to have him back to talk
and
more
doctor.
Of these hilarious stories.
I didn't even get anything in.
We barely touched on it.
You couldn't shut up, Brett.
You got too high. You couldn't remember anything. Even my name. I mean, come on. Next time, we'll get him a little sippy cup so it doesn't get too hot. I mean,
Brett, Kinga, it was a pleasure.
Such a pleasure. Saving the planet one show at a time.
One dab at a time.
Thank you for listening to In the Green Room. Join us here live every Tuesday at 6 p.m. or anytime on demand 24/7 on StarWorldWideNetworks.com.